Blog Talk Radio.
Keep you entertained, but excuse me. Tonight we're Halloween, or All Hallows' Eve, is when supposedly when the Earth is closest to is when somehow the atmosphere is closest to the next dimension, the other dimension, which will allow souls to come back, you know, and visit, I guess, if you will, to Earth. And that's been celebrated for centuries by, you know, by the pagans as well as Catholics and All Hallows' Eve. And, there is some truth to this. But it's always been... of course, fictionalized and overdone, but everything that we do to excess is basically our projection of who we are, you know, who and what we are, or who we wish to be, and you know, Halloween is one of those kind of nights when you project yourself, you know, who you are, either you're a fairy princess or you're a devil or a zombie or whatever that you, you know, want to be. And children are more imaginative in that way than adults sometimes. But and it's fun for them. And it was always fun for me when I was a child to do Halloween. But what happens is when you get older, you start to understand the seriousness of this day, okay, and how it's taken seriously by Satanists around the world, and you know, human sacrifices are made on this day, and it's a very, very frightening time, very malicious time, very malignant time, a malevolent time for us, and but in some ways. My good friend George Dixon used to say that we are a polarized society. You know, we're polarized in ourselves, in that you know we have good and evil within us, and we constantly try to celebrate the good in mankind at the same time to the detriment of the evil side of man. But well, you know, what really is evil? I don't know. But let us move beyond evil tonight. I want to go beyond that period, and I just want to talk about something that's very frightening to me, is that the obsession we have now with zombified people, with zombies, you know, the living dead. And this is a time that's predicted in Revelation, time that's predicted that, you know, in the end times, the demons will walk the earth, you know, and possess men and women and children, you know. And we hear about the horrific crimes that are being done, the horrific things that are being done. And even in the sense of our leaders, our presidents are, you know, are more frightening and dictatorial than ever. And I wanted to start tonight's show off. I have a short story that I want to read that I wrote, and a couple of other small articles centered around spiritual issues. But for some reason, I felt it was important, and I've had so many requests on my website for this, searches that have come to my site. Because of Credo Matwa's prophetic poem on Barack Obama in 2009. And this is up on YouTube, actually. But it's about a three-minute prediction by Credo Matwa, who is a Sulu shaman of international acclaim, and his predictions are frighteningly accurate. And he wrote this poetic prediction in 2009 about when at the election of inauguration of Barack Obama. And I'd like to play it for you tonight just to understand the power of prophecy, the malevolence of prophecy, and also the spiritual aspects of this, that I believe that Barack Obama is on the level, on the edge now. He's on the edge. And there's so many people that dislike the man. He's betrayed so many of his things, and people are starting to see through him. And he's actually a frightening figure. But the fact that Credo Matwa saw this, and Credo Matwa, again, like I say, he's an African Zulu shaman, and he predicted this. And I'm going to play it for you, and I hope you... I mean, you don't take it. If you're an Obama supporter or whatever, that, you know, that's fine. Take this for what it's worth. It was said and became an internationally famous prediction by an internationally renowned shaman. And play it for you now.
An actor walks upon the floodlit stage of life, wearing a mask of an angel beneath a demon's gown. Pretense smiles upon the crowded hall of life, holding out hope as bright as it is false. Son of a woman whose veins flows the blood of ancient Ireland and dark Africa's plains. You are Obama, nicknamed the Standing King. You are Barack, O son born to deceive. The suffering hordes of Africa look up to you. See a black savior where naught but a Judas strides. An entrapper of nations, bringer of dismal war. Behind the robes and the nylon wings of hope. Oh, may those who look upon you see you as you are. May those who hope in you behold you as you be. A prince deceitful to bring down Africa's shrines. A siren who leads Africa's ships onto rocks of obliteration. Your rule, my lord, will not be one of peace. Your reign, my king, will not be one of smiles. Even as we speak in caves, both dark and dank, enraged fanatics plot your dark demise. They will put around your head a blood-wet martyr's crown. Oh, Black Kennedy, following the one before, may God forgive thee and thy fiery spouse. As you walk in silence from the stage of life, Barack Obama, blessed son, O standing king.
Rather staggering, you know. Quite staggering, actually. I wanted to play another one. Credo Matua's World Prediction. And let me play that now.
Had precise visions of how, when, and where World War III will begin and spread.
I am shown that in the very near future, Islam will rise like a lion throughout the world, and that a new war will break out in the Middle East, even bloodier than the war that was fought against Saddam Hussein. A great Middle Eastern nation, I think it is Iran, will go all out to acquire atomic power. Iran will buy terrible substances from China, substances by which you can create atomic power stations, substances by which also you can create atomic bombs and other hideous weapons of that kind. I see that there is a ship in the ocean. It is an old and ugly vessel which should have been sunk or scrapped long ago. And it is taking some radioactive substance to Iran. One of the containers will overheat, and the ship will sink in the Indian Ocean. At first, the world will not be told about the sinking of this ship. Millions of fish start drifting, dead and lifeless, towards the beaches of India, of East Africa, and Arabia. And the first inkling of this disaster that humanity will have will be when starving people in India and other countries nearby, they will eat this fish and they too will die. And it will be only then that the world will be aware. People of the news will go to India to look into this disaster, and they will discover that many organizations were responsible for covering up this tragedy. In many parts of the world, people shall start eating each other. In the coast of Yemen and in the coast of India shall be found people who will die because they have eaten other people who have eaten the contaminated fishes, and there will be an outcry in the world, and the violence and the warfare will spread not only in the Middle East but also throughout. out North Africa, as far out.
That was kind of weird, but, you know, that's kind of, what he's saying, you know. But his prediction of his prediction about Barack Obama was kind of frightening, actually. And who knows? But let's go on to a little lighter subject, whether it is or not. This is a story that I wrote back in July, I believe, of 2011. That's when I published it, but I wrote it, and I'm not sure. But it's a short story. But it's kind of, I wrote it in first person. It's something that came to me and something I saw and something that I wanted to write about. It's called Melgazar. I recall the entryway and the stone stairs. I remember the heavy bark trees surrounding the doorway. The cold, damp air seeped out as I opened the heavy wooden door. I stepped into the doorway as the dank smell of mildew and rot overwhelmed me. I backed out of the doorway onto the stone stairs, wondering if I should venture further. The sun began to break through the heavy mist as its rays searched the hallway of the abandoned house. Several odd insects scrambled away from the sunlight as it shone on the old wooden floorboards. I began to enter the doorway as the wood floors creaked and cracked beneath my feet. As I stood in the hallway, I noticed off to the right, another room, vacant, empty, except for a small wooden chair. The single window in the room had an aged yellow blind pulled halfway down. The room had a small stone fireplace and hadn't been used in many years. Damp leaves and debris laid in the base of the fireplace. Down the hallway, I could see light peering into the hallway from another room. I carefully walked towards it as the floorboards creaked beneath me. At the end of the short hallway, I turned into the lighted room. It was a kitchen with old wooden counters and cabinets. I felt a strange presence in that room, as though I had just disturbed someone or something. I felt I was about to meet the spirit who occupied the house. I sensed a kind, feminine energy, seemingly amplified as the sunlight shone through the kitchen window. Its warmth radiated around the room, as though the spirit was moving from one side of the room to another. I waited in the doorway to sense if the spirit would acknowledge me. A red cardinal perched on the outside sill of the kitchen window and peered into the room to watch me. I said hello to the spirit and asked if it would speak to me. I sensed a movement in the air. Though the window was closed and no breeze could penetrate the room, I sensed the energy coming closer, as if to acknowledge my presence. As I concentrated upon the light beaming onto the floor, I spoke softly and asked who the spirit was. The name Melgazar came into my mind, and I said it out loud. The name then came to me again, and I said it out loud. Are you Melgazar? I heard only silence for several moments, and then I heard the word yes. I then saw a ghostly image bathed in sunlight standing in front of the window. At first I saw an outline of her hair shrouded in light. As I watched closely, I could make out the image of her head and shoulders, but her face was still invisible. I then heard another word in my mind, welcome. At that moment, the red cardinal took flight, and I heard the spirit ask, who are you? I did not give my name, but replied, I am a seeker of beauty, a photographer, and artist. There was no reply except for a slight movement of the air. Then I heard her say, what brought you to my home? I replied, I do not know. I was drawn here by curiosity. As I looked for her outline near the window, I could see more of her as she appeared in a white knee-length dress with a delicate floral pattern. I told her that I could see her and that she was beautiful. I could see her smile as I heard her say, why do you think I'm beautiful? How can you see me? I have been dead over 50 years. I told her that I could see her and feel her energy. She replied, you're a strange man. Why would you wish to be friends with a spirit who seeks only silence and to be alone? I told her I only desired to seek beauty in all forms. And I believed her to be beautiful. As I turned to the window, I saw her face. She was a woman in her 60s, pale and thin, but without blemish. Her figure was hidden beneath her dress as she moved further away from me and away from the sunlight. I asked her not to move out of the light so I could fully see her. She continued to move away from the window and into the dark corner of the room. I then heard her say, I'm not beautiful, nor was I ever a beautiful woman. I waited my entire life for someone to say I was beautiful. My mother died when I was very young, and my father was a cruel man who kept me here as a prisoner my entire life. When he died, I did not have the courage to leave. I know I am dead, but I cannot leave this place. If I am beautiful, why are you the only one to have ever told me? I told her that life could be cruel. However, beauty was something only felt by someone and believed in. She replied, I have hidden away from the world my entire life for fear of being mocked or ridiculed. My father kept me in this house until he passed away. I lived here another 20 years alone. I died by accident not far from here, as I tripped on a root in the orchard and fell to the ground, hitting my head. I never woke up. My body still remains unburied in the orchard. You are the first person I have ever seen since my father's death. The house is so remote, no one knows it's here. Her face became clearer and almost girl-like as she stared at me from across the room. You must leave, she said. I need no one. I will remain here. You have come 50 years too late. Leave me and return to your world. I told her that I was sent to free her from her prison. I told her by her need to be free and cross over into the light of eternity. I asked her how she lived so long without meeting anyone. And she said she had many animal friends and an imaginary friend who she spoke with every day. When she died, she never spoke to her friend again, though she waited for all these many years since her death. I asked her what her friend's name was, and she said, Melgazar. I asked her why her friend had such a strange name. She said it was the name her friend told her her name was. And I asked if she was older, to which she replied that she was the same age and that they had been together for as long as she can remember. As her expression saddened by Maldazar's memory, I asked her if she had ever seen her. She replied that she had seen her every day. I asked what she looked like. She was silent for a moment, and I could see her faint expression begin to soften and smile. She said Maldazar was beautiful and funny. She had blonde hair and blue eyes. She never left me, and I don't know why she left me when I died. I told her that perhaps Maldazar was her.
But she became angry and said, no, Malgazar was too beautiful and too funny and too perfect to be her. I asked her why she thought Malgazar was her friend. And she replied, because she liked me and I loved her. She was much smarter than I was and did everything perfect. Even my father would laugh at her and tell me I should be like her. But Malgazar hated my father and never spoke to him or showed herself to him. I was her only friend, and she was my only friend. I had not asked the spirit what her name was, and she never offered to tell me. Until I finally asked her, she turned away from me and retreated into the shadows of the room and remained silent. I asked her again what her name was, and she turned to me and said, I don't have one. I asked her why she did not have a name, to which she replied, she was never given one. Her father never told her a name and said she didn't deserve one. I asked her if I could name her. What name would she like to most have? She paused for several moments and said, Malgazar. I would like to be called Malgazar. I asked why she chose her friend's name over any other name in the world. And she replied, because she is the only name I know, and I have her name. And if I have her name, then I might be just like her, perfect and beautiful. I then told her I would call her Malgazar, and one day, her write a story about our meeting. And she emerged from the shadows and stood before me. She then smiled warmly and said, I do not know your name. I told her that I did not have one. And I asked her what name she would give me, to which she smiled and said, friend. I nodded my head in agreement and said, yes, I like that name. I am your friend. Her entire body suddenly emerged into visible form. Her features were exactly how she described Malgazar, a beautiful, radiant, feminine spirit emboldened by my attention and surprise. You're beautiful, Malgazar. I said, may I take a picture of you? She said, no one has ever taken a picture of had ever taken a picture of her when she was alive. But she would be very pleased if I could take one of her. I took my digital camera out of my pocket and focused on her form. As I looked into the viewfinder, I could see nothing. And when I looked at her without the camera, I saw her standing before me. I took several pictures, hoping the lens would capture part of her energy and essence. But it did not. What I saw could only be seen by the mind's eye. But I never forgot her and created a painted portrait of her several days later from the image I remembered. She remained still as she looked at me while I took her picture. She could tell I was not pleased with the result and said, do you see me in the picture? What do I look like? Am I as beautiful as you say I am? I looked at her as she stood before me. The late morning sun was beaming through the kitchen window behind her, creating a translucent image of a divine magnificence. Tears came to my eyes as I believed I was seeing her soul transcend into the beam of light. She waited for my reply until I said, you are beautiful, Malgazar. She smiled as if all the sunlight in the world were in her eyes and then said, thank you. At that moment, she vanished into the sunbeam, and I knew she was gone, free from this world forever. That was Malgazar. And I've had many, many I guess, or visions and other things through my life. So that's when communicated with spirits. Channeled strong spirits. Actually wrote down a number of auto writing and whatnot over the years, many years. So this is nothing different to me, but there are trapped spirits in this world, and there are people who are zombies, if you will, who have no spirit, have no soul. They just seem to be walking around aimlessly, dead. But notice there's a special story for me to write, and I really enjoyed this writing it. You can get it on my website. You can see it under short stories in that category. What I'd like to do is take this conversation one step higher and to read something that I wrote about a year or so ago. And it's called The Doorway to Everything. I'm typing it in my website as a poem. The Doorway to Everything. And an unusual piece that I wrote back about a year ago, October 15th of last year. And everything I write is dated on this website, so, and you can go to it on the October 15th, 2012, I wrote this. Seems like I wrote it yesterday, but called The Doorway to Everything. Somewhere in my awakened consciousness, there is a place that is blurred and unrecognizable, a place in the mist of memory unknown and unexperienced. There is a place within my mind that refuses to reveal itself. It isn't my subconscious. I spend my sleeping hours there and know it quite well. It is a place that all thought seems to go and end at a closed door. It is the end of all knowledge and wisdom, the end of all understanding both intellectually and spiritually. There is no great chain or lock on the door. It is a large closed door at the end of a hallway. It may be fear or frustration, or simply a confused state of consciousness that prevented me from entering the door. Yet each time I attempted to open it, the door would suddenly vanish and transform into a wall. Even when I tried to become transparent or pray to the great power of the universe, I could not open the door or pass through the wall. Once I felt a sense of hope and tried to enter, but nothing happened and I was forced to withdraw in frustration. Another time I spent many hours in the hallway wondering why I could not pass through the door. I wondered if there really was anything beyond the door, and I had come to the end of conscious and unconscious thought. I left my body and floated through the universe where all stargates, all planets, all pathways were open to me. Then I saw a great sun and traveled to it. It was brighter than anything I had ever seen. It was beyond all my imagination or spiritual comprehension. I felt embraced by its great light, but not blinded or harmed or hindered in my approach to it. And as I began to merge with its light, I felt a oneness and completeness of mind and spirit. I never wanted to leave. I felt as if I had never left. No, it had always been there. Without warning, I immediately returned into my body, where I left in the hallway, which I left in the hallway next to the wall. I became completely aware of everything around me, when suddenly the wall vanished and a door appeared and opened, and I saw nothing beyond it. It was not infinity or oblivion or a void or darkness. It was simply nothing. Then I understood that I was everything. We are people. We are everything that we experience. We are everything around us. We are it. I mean, we create it. We are our own universe. We are our own reality. Nobody else is. We are. Whatever that is, we create every single day, every minute of the day, is what we are. There's nothing more. There's nothing out there more than what we see and experience in the given moment. And that is what we create every single moment. You know? Either we astral travel through the universe, we're creating these wonderful things. We're creating these wonderful visions. Or if we have these horrible visions or experience these incredible, horrible things, then we're envisioning that too, and that's everything. But everything that we go through and everything we experience in our lives, it's that of our own making. It's in front of us. It's horrible, really. And that is the reason for education, the reason for knowledge, the reason for being able to open up your mind and your soul and absorb the universe, you know, and all of its wonders and all of its amazing wonders and power. Attracting that power to you, that power of mysticism, that power of immortality, you know. Because we exist within this third dimension as flesh and bone, but in that we're basically a holograph. we die and we go on, and I can prove that we do. I can prove that we do. I have proven to myself and to others, and others have proven to me that there is another dimension, there is another way, another place that we go to. And we go there constantly in our minds, and we all live in another dimension, and we come to this dimension to experience pain and pleasure and all the other emotions and stuff that we don't... I don't know. It's just something that we must do. I was told many years ago by an astrologer her name was Joan Kagan, and she actually did a karmic astrology, and I believe you can find her on the internet, but she's a wonderful, wonderful astrologer, but she does everything she bases upon karma, okay? A karmic astrological karma, you know, and oddly enough, it was phenomenal when I first had the reading done, and she gave me a CD of that reading that she did for me, and I still have it, and I've loaded it into my computer, and on occasion I'll listen to it. And recently, in the last month or so, I wound up listening to it three or four times. It was about an hour long reading. And I couldn't believe that this was done in 2007, I believe, when she did it for me. And the prophetic aspect of it, not only did she, I mean, she didn't really know me, but she was looking at my chart that she had created and saw, holy cow. And she told me almost everything that happened in my life and was to happen in my life, you know. And it wasn't until, well, let's see, that was seven, so... That would have been, what, 5-6 years ago. And things that she said didn't dawn on me. I didn't really understand until this year. when I reread it again, because this, all those things happened in the last few years that she was predicting 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And I went, holy cow, how could this be? Because I had actually forgotten about her reading until I heard it again, and I played it again, and I played it several times because there were so many things that I had that came to me that were amazing. So, yes, I lived before, she says, and we all have lived before, but we came back, and she says, I came back into this lifetime with an extreme ambition, okay, to correct my karma, if you will. And I said, and I thought, wow, what a crazy thing that's to do, you know, coming back to correct. She said, yeah, and it wasn't just a light life that you wanted to lead. It was something very difficult that you had to accomplish in your life to correct and to push and to enlighten people and to whatever and teach and whatever. And it was really funny that all these things she talked about, and sincerely, and what I had done all my life. And she really didn't know very much about me when she did that reading, but I was so floored, not so much at the time of the reading, but years later, you know, when I realized that... you know, she was so accurate and so right on, and how could she have possibly done that? And it's funny that you get these things in your life when you need them, you know. And over the last couple of months, I've gone through a series of odd emotional ups and downs, and I've just started to come out of it in the last week or so, really, where I started to feel, you know, normal again, you know, or be able to make sense of the last couple of months, you know, certain issues. But by hearing that, it was something that I had to go through anyway. It was something that was very, very difficult. Period that she predicted 6 years ago that I was going through now, you know. So anyway, that what I'm trying to say is what she said, one of the major things, the entire premise of her reading was that we reincarnate, okay? We come back into this dimension and into this world to experience something, to correct our karma, okay, to correct our karma. And we choose who our parents are going to be. We choose what kind of lifestyle we will have. And we choose whatever that is that we're doing. I mean, whether we are come back as a criminals or come back as whatever we come back as, it's our decision because we're trying to work through some karmic issue in our lives or in our spirit or in our souls. And our being eternal spirits, immortal spirits, we have all kinds of time and all kinds of, we have the entire dire eternity, you know, to perfect ourselves to jump into as many experiences and lives and lifestyles and whatnot. And we can experience this in a number of different ways. We can experience it in parallel universes. We experience it in in different dimensions. And I'm a true believer in multiple dimensions. You know, and I've experienced it, I've taught it, and I've been taught by masters in this area. And you know, I remember George Dixon used to tell me, he said, "Leo, we live in a fourth dimension. We are fourth dimensional beings." And I said, "Yeah, I guess you're right, but But it took me a while to actually grasp that concept, and I did, you know, and I understood it. I understood it well, and bringing it back to here, bring it back home here. I just wanted to say that what is amazing, okay, so amazing about this, about our lives and about our souls, is that we are immortal, all right? And though we may not think so, our spirits are immortal. Our bodies are just vehicles for this time. Consider a body like a car, you know, eventually runs out. You know, you repair it and repair it and repair it, but, you know, eventually it gets old and worn out and doesn't want to go anymore. And that's kind of like what happens here. You know, either you get a new one or you buy a new car, you know, or buy a new body, or let the old one go and then go into your next phase of existence. But I don't want to get off subject here, and I've got some time left, but I really think that we are entering a new era of man, right? And that is something that I wrote back last year. I wrote an essay on this, not that long. I'd like to read it to you tonight, because back last year, December 21st of 2012, we were entering the new age, okay, of the Mayan calendar we were talking about, and George Dixon, UFOs, if you remember, we spoke about this up until the very last show that we did back in, I believe it was beginning of June of 2012. He passed away 2 weeks later. But I'd like to read this, because I do tribute him for this, inspiring this. It's called Entering the New Era of Man. As the world and universe enter the new era of man, I have become pensive in my faith that the end time is approaching. My great friend George Dixon, up until his death in June of this year, believed that we were already in a new era and were merging into the fourth dimension. On so many occasions I experienced his belief and optimism, yet now that he has ascended, I feel quite alone in my faith of the complete ascension of humanity. Perhaps I feel this way because so little around the world has changed positively and seems to be plunging headlong into chaos. As a revolutionary optimist, I am inspired by the voices of discord I hear and read daily in my research of current events. However, as I become more engaged with the revolutionary fever seeming to take over the planet, I become more aware of the opposition forces that have engulfed the world with military and political oppression, expanding police brutality and government indifference to it. Heinous crimes of being committed by supposedly peacekeeping forces committed to protect and serve the people of their towns, states, and countries. The development of a police state is a very real threat to everyone in every country. But this is what has been predicted for the end times. As the world population awakens to its heightened sense of the new era and merge into the fourth dimension, it must throw off the shackles of third dimensional imprisonment. Those who have imprisoned humanity in the third dimension are struggling to keep us here to serve them. Unless we completely understand our imprisonment and slavery to our oppressors, we will continue to remain their slaves. Those who see and understand the new era of man arising in expectation to the merge, to for the merge into the new dimension. We feel ourselves changing. We see the world changing and our families and friends changing. Either they are changing toward an open and carefree transformation and acceptance of the change, or they are closing them into themselves and embracing their fear of the changing times. We are now witnessing this in our political debates. The fear of letting go of all that is trying to destroy us is diametrically opposite of all that has and will save us. As humanity enters a new era and the new age of Aquarius, we must embrace this inevitable change that is occurring. We cannot deny that it is happening, nor can we deny that we are changing. We can only obstinately refuse to change and adapt as dinosaurs and Neanderthals refuse to adapt to change. We must adapt completely and willingly, accepting the changes within us and the awakening of our minds and spirits to the new reality. That reality is what we are in now. It is what we will be in our future. Those who accept the change, the great change that is occurring, will thrive in the new era. Those who refuse to accept the change and revert back to our unevolved selves will not survive well the coming age change. The yet unfulfilled final Hopi prophecy predicts that the coming of the blue planet that will be seen clearly and brightly in our skies. The prophecy states that those who are to ascend will be drawn to the blue planet and rise to it, whereby those who fear it or wish only to remain on Earth will and suffer the results of the cataclysm that will affect all of the inhabitants of the Earth, which is the red planet. This prophecy, as hard as it is to believe now, may well reveal itself next year in 2013. When a large, unnamed comet is scheduled to appear in our solar system, Revelation predicts millions of demons falling to Earth. It describes the shapes and sizes of the demonic spirits and resembles the mist and water that surround a comet. That mist is frozen ice that will become partially vaporized as it enters Earth's atmosphere. Also, it is possible for parts of the comet to fall to Earth as it nears our gravitational field. Great pieces of comets have fallen to Earth in our history. The great flood and destruction of Atlantis and the creation of part of the Atlantic Ocean has been attributed to a large meteor or piece of comet colliding onto the Earth. This also has been an explanation of the sudden extinction of the dinosaur. Some sources include the Bible, have stated that 95% of the inhabitants of Earth perished during this time. If those who are awakened to the change and changes to come are aware of these ancient calamities in Earth's history, why can't they not imagine it happening again? All scientific agencies devoted to studying seismic activity around the world are predicting more violent eruptions. Numerous earthquakes have been reported and odd multiple quakes have been experienced by countries and continents within the last 2 years, more than any other time in recorded history. There is already scientific warnings announced about a possible electromagnetic solar cloud that will reach the Earth sometime in 2013, which could potentially wipe out the entire electric grid worldwide. It is even possible that the solar storm is strong enough to destroy Earth's atmosphere and destroy all life on the Earth. These are not idle warnings. These are warnings from the foremost scientific communities. I believe we are in the end times. I also believe that we all have a choice to escape a tragic event by embracing the change we already feel is here. We must understand ourselves and the reason for our being alive at this time. It is a time of great cosmic change as humanity ascends into another dimension. I do not fear this transition. I understand fourth dimensional existence. It is one of clarity and spiritual mastery, where our bodies no longer imprison us in our fifth and our five senses. Fourth dimensional existence is where we manifest our every desire. but where only those who desire peace, love, and completeness of their own existence will embrace it and thrive. All who deny their spiritual ascension, or the ascension of others in this way, shall be doomed to experience the manifestation of their worst fears. They cannot escape the changes that occur, for they will be involuntarily thrust into the fourth dimension. Their own reluctance and fear and pettiness of mind and spirit will manifest into all that their thoughts and actions represent. Many who are reading this understand me and are ready for the new era of man. Those who do not understand me, I urge you to awaken soon, for little time is left before the change is complete, or you will be forced to accept it in fear. Let us all prepare to join humanity's greatest celebration on December 22nd, 2012, when we celebrate our passing from the old era of man and enter the new. Well, that happened, folks, and I strongly believe that it did. We entered into the age of Aquarius. We left the Piscean Age, and we went into the era. Now, everybody must remember that Christianity basically dominated the last 2,000 years. Christianity was what? Christianity was symbolized by a fish, the great fisherman. Pisces is represented as a fish. So that might explain to you what the passing age is. But Aquarius is the age we're in now, that we've entered in. And this is one of human enlightenment. And ever since last year, the last couple of years, as we've transitioned into this age, this new age of Aquarius, you've seen the revolution that's taking place around the globe. You felt it in your own heart. You felt it in your own soul. You feel it now as, you know, we try to make sense out of what's happening to our own country here in the United States and the countries around the world. The collapse of our economy, the collapse of the middle class, you know, wars and wars and killings and insanity going on everywhere. Well, that's part of the time. Part of this ascension process where people are going mad because they don't understand what's happening. They're clinging to whatever they know, you know, and hoping that this is it, but they're refusing to accept the change that's happening to them physically, mentally, emotionally, right? And we have to accept that, folks. We have to accept that we're on our way and have been for the last, for forever. But man has finally come to this moment. And I guess this is a cool time to talk about it. That's why I felt like inspired to talk about it tonight on Halloween. All Hallows Eve, where spirits rise, you know, and they're closest to the next dimension. So let us cross over. Let us shake hands with the spirits rather than fear them. Let us shake hands with the next dimension. Let us merge our soul, our minds, and our thought into that next dimension where we are greater and kinder and gentler and enlightened beings rather than the scared, sick, lonely, depressed, diseased, beings here in the third dimension, which was where we came. We have to remember that we came here to experience this, so that we could move on to the next dimension, greater beings with greater understanding, of our souls, of our abilities, of our talents, of who we are and why we are here. And we move on to the next stage of our evolution. And with that, I'll leave you. And I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. I hope you have a pleasant evening. And I'll leave you with this great song. It's called October 9th. And we'll go from there.
And I hope you have a pleasant night. And please join me next week. And visit my website. These are all on my things I wrote tonight are all on my website. Other great things. So good night, everyone. Thanks for joining.